My name is Tram Chamberlain. My Vietnamese name is Pham Trang Bao Tram. I speak Vietnamese. I came over here when I was 9 in April of 1975, and that's the story I'm going to share with you. And the reason is because I want everyone to know that our God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Excuse me. during the Vietnam War, I grew up in the Vietnam War. It was happening, and all men, of course, were drafted. And my father was a captain in the Air Force. My uncle was a first lieutenant in the Air Force, and he flew C-130s. Those are huge cargo planes that have a ramp so you can drive tanks into them, and they transport tanks and other things. So there's no seats inside, of course. Troopers can get in them. They can fit about, I think, 90 troops, and they jump out of a small door. but anyway, that was the kind of plane that he flew. And on a C-130, there's usually a pilot, a co-pilot, a couple of fuel engineers, and a couple of loadmasters. So it takes quite a few people to get this going. At any rate, the war was not going very well in the United States, who was helping us with the democracy. A democratic government in South Vietnam pulled out for various reasons, and we knew at that time that it was going to fall to communism, who was advancing from the north and taking different cities day by day. It was just a matter of time, especially my father, who was more aware of what was going on because he spoke English, and he listened to the Voice of America on shortwave radio, and as opposed to the news that you hear during the war, which is tempered with, yeah, we're winning, you know, and propaganda, essentially. And so he and my uncle said, we need to get out of the country. The main reason was we were Christians, which is not a major religion in Vietnam. It's Buddhism, actually. But praise the Lord, we're one of the few Christians who, my parents were Christians and my grandparents were, through the work of the Christian Missionary Alliance in Vietnam earlier in the 40s. At any rate, a couple things that were in our way, mainly that during the war, if you leave the country, it is considered high treason. And they not only frown upon that, they publicly execute you as an example to other people so that you do not do that. They can't afford to just have people fleeing during a war. And my dad and my uncle had to discuss it secretively. We couldn't tell, you know, talk to our neighbors, of course, or even fellow soldiers. My uncle knew that if anyone was going to get us out, it would have to be him since he flies a C-130 and my dad doesn't. But you have to have the agreement of the pilot and the fuel engineers and the loadmasters. And so, but he wanted to take the opportunity. And so, you know, they were praying very fervently that the Lord would allow something. And one day, April 3rd, 1975, my uncle, who has a friend in another squadron, was asked to fly the plane because his other pilot and some of the fuel masters and load masters were too exhausted from their last recent mission to fly. Oh, I forgot to mention. Now, obviously, if you have a plane, they know that you're going to try to escape with it. So what they do to prevent that is to only allow you to fuel up just enough for your mission. So you would fly from Saigon, which was the capital of Vietnam at the time, up to where you needed to fly, and then there you have to refuel, but just enough so that you could get back to Saigon so you don't leave the country. So that's kind of the background there. And now, it's very unusual for people of different squadrons to come together. They like to have people of the same squadron fly together, so there's camaraderie, and also people don't just leave on them. But as it happened, my uncle was able to fly with this co-pilot, friend of his, who he had been talking about escaping. So he thought, my goodness, I have a plane and I have a friend. You know, what an opportunity, but I need fuel. So he flipped on the fuel indicator, and it was full. And he turned to the fuel engineer, and he said, what's this? And the fuel engineer said, oh, I was taking a smoking break while I was fueling, and I forgot about the rationing. Please don't report me. And my uncle said, okay, this time, but not again. So he calls up my dad, and he says, we have a plane. get everybody together, as many as you can, as secretly as you can, and we're going to meet at this abandoned airfield, just maybe half an hour from the main city. And that's what my dad did. He went and he told as many of our relatives as we could, and we all met at a person's home, and we prayed. But in order to delay the mission time so that my dad could gather everybody, my uncle and his friend flipped a couple of circuit breakers where it was kind of hard to see, and the plane couldn't start. So then the fuel engineers had to hunt around for it. So that delayed them long enough, so praise the Lord. But on the way out to the abandoned airfield, there was a lot of traffic, and then we were delayed as well, because the traffic was due to all the people trying to escape from the northern part of the country. I mean, they were walking with children and baggage and everything just on the roads to try to get away from the communists. So, I mean, we saw, you know, the beginning of the end at that point. And again, the Lord somehow delayed that plane so that it touched down at the abandoned airfield just as our cars were driving up. And we're thinking, it's an abandoned airfield, but it wasn't. As they were touching down, my uncle, a jeep drives up with soldiers and a grenade launcher aimed at the nose of the airplane. You know, these soldiers are going, what's going on? It's supposed to be an abandoned airfield. There's a C-130 and a bunch of people rushing the plane. And I have to explain, the C-130 has four propellers, and you don't turn on a C-130 easily nor shut it down very quickly, so you leave it on if you're trying to be in a hurry. And so here we are. They lowered, like I said, the entrance is just a ramp. Inside there's nothing because you have to load tanks and other cargo. So the plane just lands with the propellers going and lowers a ramp, and we all rush the plane up the ramp. And if you've ever been behind a C-130, you'll know that the prop wash is incredible. It's like being in a wind tunnel, worse. And here we are. We had 56 people all together, not counting the people in the cockpit, from a six-month-old baby to an 85-year-old grandma. And we're all trying to rush the plane and, you know, bringing whatever we could with us. Now, if you had 2 hours to leave the country for the rest of your life, what would you pack? My mother, who was crying at the time, and of course I didn't know what was going on, I was 9 at the time, praise the Lord, packed our photos, which of course we could never, ever replace. So that was just a really wonderful thing. At any rate, for some reason, they did not fire their grenade launcher, because if they did, that would have been the end of us. But they had to take off, and everybody was able to get on board, even though the ramp wasn't able to close before they took off. So here they're trying to close the ramp as we're taking off, and then they start firing at us with the rifles. But it just bounced off the shell and the ramp, and no one was hurt. So that was another miracle. For the next few hours, my uncle turned off the transponder so that no one could know who he was, and flew at treetop level. And apparently that's quite a feat with a C-130, I found out, because I was talking to a friend in the Air National Guard, and he was a C-130 pilot, and I said, yeah, and this is, you know, my uncle did this. And he goes, that's your uncle? We've all heard of him. He's like Superman to us, you know. But he flew for the next few hours. Of course, our country is on Southeast Asia, and they had this fuel, and now where are they going to go? They hadn't thought that far yet, because this was a new development. They thought about, okay, we've heard about Thailand. That wasn't very friendly to us, and Cambodia. We haven't heard anything about Singapore. Let's just go there. Only because we didn't hear anything negative about them. So for the next few hours, took us about 3 hours, he flew right at sea level to get below the radar, because we didn't want to be caught. And in fact, they did send a couple of jets after us, but couldn't find us and went home. We found that out later. Praise the Lord. So yes. Anyway, we flew into Singapore, and you just don't land at an airport. You have to request permission. And so they don't know who we were. They didn't have to let us land. They could have just let us die in the ocean when our fuel ran out. But my dad, who spoke English, asked to, you know, have a clearance for the plane. And they said, okay, Herky, you're cleared for, you know, this runway. So we landed. And then my dad, who, like I said, spoke English, went out and explained to them that we need to see their supervisors. Well, it was about 7 o'clock at night, and all the supervisors had gone home. So they said, we don't know what to do with you. Stay on the plane until our supervisors come the next day. Well, the next day, My dad went to them and said, we are political and religious refugees. We would like to seek asylum. And the reason is because we are Christians, and we don't want to live under communism rule. And we also are political refugees because we will be put in concentration camps when the communists come. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. One of my uncles was not able to come, and he had to be in the communist concentration camps for about 10 years. And it was brainwashing camp, essentially. And they called it re-education, as communists have fancy names for this. But praise the Lord, he's over here now. We were able to bring him over. So anyway, in the morning, the supervisors got together and you know, the ambassador and everything. This is a political situation. And they said, Singapore is neutral. We don't want to have anything to do with this war. We're sending you back. And we said, if you do, it's certain death for us because they're going to publicly execute us. And they said, that's not our problem. And so we prayed. they didn't have a place to put us. So they put us in jail. Now, Singapore jails are very clean, I have to let you know. They separated the men and the women, stripped us all down because to make sure we weren't drug runners, which is a good guess, but we weren't. And allowed us to get together every night and have family devotions and devotion and prayer. And of course, at that time, our lives are in the balance. We had no idea what was going on, and we were just trusting in the Lord and singing hymns. And one of our favorite hymns to sing is God Will Take Care of You, which I hope we can sing after this. But it takes on new meaning when you're really, your life depends on it. At any rate, what happened, though, in the morning was reporters. Thank you. Reporters somehow got a hold of the news. And so here they were, all pressed up against the fence at the airport, taking pictures of the C-130 and putting it in the newspaper. Well, now the government was in a bad position. If they sent us home in secret, nobody would be the wiser, right, that they were sending us to our certain death. But now everybody knew about it, so then they had to do something. But they still were quite firm on sending us back. In fact, the Vietnamese ambassador, meaning the ambassador from Vietnam to Singapore, was saying, yeah, you guys need to go back. And my dad said to him, he was from the South Vietnam government, which was where we were from. My dad says to him, oh, are you planning to go back? And he could not answer that because he knew very well that it was going to be communist in about a month. So... But the only person who stood up for us, and we found this out later, was the jailer. He had watched us pray and sing, and he was also a Christian, praise the Lord. That country, Singapore, is a city-state. There's a lot of different religions, Muslim. I don't know what the main religion is there, but not Christianity. At any rate, the Lord had us to have a Christian. And he was the only person in that room who kept saying, no, we have to send them on. So... praise the Lord. The International Committee of Refugees came in, stepped in, somehow they called them, and said, okay, we'll just send you on, and that's the only time we're going to do it. And sure enough, it was the only time, because after that, another C-130 did what we did, and they did send them back. So, but anyway, we said, we want to go to the United States. So they said, okay. And they all expenses paid. They paid all for 60 of us. I'm including the crew now, because a crew wanted to come with us. Onto Saipan, which is a small, series small islands in the Pacific. Very nice hotel, because it was a tourism spot. It's near the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest trench in the ocean in the world. And then they sent us on to Guam, which is a holding place for refugees, because at that time, it was May 1975, and the country fell, and boatloads of people were leaving now. So great many people have more exciting stories than us, and a lot of them did not make it. But so here we are in Guam. And while we're in Guam waiting, some soldiers came up to my father. And they said, are you Pham Quang Tham? And he goes, yes. And he said, are you the ones who flew out in the C-130? Yes. Well, we were sent to bring you back. We have gallows built already at the airport. We have all this... artillery and ammunition in case you should prove difficult, and we have 56 handcuffs. But the country fell, so our orders are moot. Here are your death warrants. And they gave them to us. Now, the fact that the Lord would time it so that, you know, They would follow us from Singapore to Saipan to Guam, and then the country would fall so that their orders would be, you know, not counted anymore. It's just, I think, timing from the Lord to show us what he saved us from. So we have these orders. My dad still keeps them as a memory of God's loving kindness to us. And so we were there. We were there for I don't know. It runs together in my mind when you're nine, about a couple weeks, and then we were sent on to Camp Pendleton in Southern California, and where we were adopted by an American family, so we could move here to America. My uncle was a pilot. He got a job over here flying for U.S. Air, and he retired. But he still goes around and tells his escape story to different FAA meetings. And my dad goes around to different churches and tells our escape story. The interesting thing is the C-130, of course, we left in Singapore. And it belonged to the United States in the first place. The United States lent a lot of equipment for us for the war. And so the United States came over to Singapore to get it because we had escaped on it. And they brought it back and put it in the National Air and Space Museum in the Smithsonian, which is where it is now. It's in storage. It's not on display because I personally would like to go see it. But there's a write-up about it on the website if you want to see. And there was even an article in the Smithsonian Magazine about it, just the history of the plane and what my uncle did and how he had to fly over sea level. So that was amazing. I'm trying to think. Oh, I know. After my father came here, the Lord gave him a verse, and it's 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And I thought it was just amazing, this verse. Verses 8 and 9. This is the NAS. For we do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction, which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we had the sentence of death within ourselves in order that we should not trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead, who delivered us from so great a peril of death and will deliver us. Thank you.